Chapter 7. Star System MZX-32905, near Bimiel. Today it was to be makeup. Good old-fashioned powders and pigments and pseudo-skin appliances. Lumia sat before a brightly lit mirror and got to work. It was painful, of course. Not long ago, Luke Skywalker had shot her 5 times with a blaster. 2 of those shots had hit prosthetic limbs, with simulated pain that could be switched off instantly, and damage that could be repaired within minutes. But 3 of those shots had found meat, and despite the fact that she healed at an unnaturally high rate, both from force-based healing trances and from the alterations made to her body decades earlier by the science of Emperor Palpatine, she was far from recovered. She hurt. And that was why it was to be makeup today. When trying merely to hide her scarred features, she normally wore an identity-concealing scarf wrapped around her lower face. She could bring up the force illusion of normal features if obliged to reveal herself. But distracted as she now was by injuries, her control might slip, allowing viewers a glimpse of the real features beneath. Properly applied pseudoskin didn't slip. Paint-on pseudoskin eliminated the web of age lines at the corners of her eyes and mouth. Little pads affixed to the insides of her cheeks gave her face a rounder appearance. A dot of fluid that caused flesh to contract, or even wither convincingly, provided her with dimples. Pseudoskin appliances covered her scars and gave her jaw a softer, less angular line. An application of foundation smoothed out all discrepancies of texture or tone. And on top of that, she added blush, a striking red lip color, eyeliner. She donned the wig at the end, covering her graying red hair with a tumbling mass of long golden curls. When she was done, she appeared to be a woman of 30, roughly half her true age, and to possess the beauty and many of the racial stock characteristics of a woman of the Hapes Consortium. She drew on the force to dull her pain while she rose and dressed in a green gown and matching neck scarf, both overlaid with a webwork of gold thread, and altogether too much sapphire jewelry, all appropriate to a wealthy Hapen woman. It was important to dull the pain. If she hurt too much, she'd perspire, and her makeup would be undone. Dressed, she looked at herself in the mirror again, ensuring that the makeup had endured.
"The decorator is through with my battle dragon," she said.
A mnemonic, the phrase allowed her to recapture the Hapen accent quickly.
"The decorator is through with my battle dragon."
Ready and confident, she gave herself a nod, and then marched into the next room. It was a hemispherical holocom chamber. The central area, essentially a studio-quality stage, was surrounded by a ring of holocams that together would sample a 3-dimensional image. Carefully programmed and adjusted for depth of field, they would only record images from that central area. They could not read objects farther away. That meant there was a safe zone around the central area, a ring where observers could stand and not be captured by the holocams. The walls were covered to a height of 3 meters by the broadcasting equipment, which transmitted via hyperspace, allowing instantaneous communications with targets half a galaxy away. Lumia's servant droids had set up the central area with a chair that plausibly looked like a marble throne. Lumia knew it to be foam plas covered in a beautiful mottled green and white veneer, and a matching side table. On the table was a bowl of peeled, oversized grapes. She sat carefully on the throne and sampled one of the grapes. It was gummy, nasty, not a true grape at all, but a candy-like material produced by an ancient food fabricator that had been new when this station was built. She smiled as though the grape were the best she'd ever tasted, and the pang of pain from her stomach wound would only add to an observer's impression that it was delightful. The chrono above the main comm board counted down the last few seconds remaining to her. As it neared zero, she said,
"Contact 339.
Lights above the holocams flared up, bathing her in brightness, and the holocom unit activated with a surge of noise resembling the engine startup sound of a well-tuned high-performance speeder. The disembodied voice of the system computer, male and pleasant, said, "Contact." A moment later, it added, "The target system is acknowledging. They are receiving." The computer's voice would be electronically scrubbed from the audio signal being sent. No return hologram appeared before Lumia. The target was receiving, but not yet responding. Lumia ignored the fact, presenting an appearance of unconcern while devoting herself to the bowl of repulsive grapes. After nearly 30 seconds, a hologram materialized before her, the image of a Bothan male, his fur mostly black with patches of tan, including one patch surrounding his eyes that gave him the appearance of a mask-wearer being broadcast in negative. He wore informal attire, gray pants, and a matching loose tunic that bared much of the fur of his chest and neck.
"Who are you, and how did you get this frequency and access code?"
Lumia finished her grape before turning her attention to the hologram.
"I am a humble daughter of a noble house, and I obtained these things by paying a fortune to the correct people. And you are Tathic Croylan, Deputy Intelligence Leader for the esteemed world of Bethawi."
Esteemed was perhaps too strong a word, but it was true that there was a certain amount of respect between the Hapens and Bothans. They did not have much contact, but each recognized in the other a mastery of political maneuvering, manipulation, and conspiracy. Croylan didn't bother to insist on her name. She hadn't offered it when asked. She wouldn't volunteer it.
"So," he said, "you have my attention. Briefly."
Lumia smiled.
"I will say things. You do not have to confirm or deny them. Then I will give you my frequency and access code. After this message ends, I suspect you will speak with your superiors, and then, eventually, initiate a return communication."
"Go ahead."
Croylan was professionally civil. Even if he was outraged by this intrusion into his personal time, and by the fact that his security had been at least partially compromised, it wasn't smart to insult someone who could reach him this way, and it always helped to have very wealthy contacts.
"The Bothans are preparing 3 fleets for an assault on Galactic Alliance forces," Lumia said. "A just response to what you have suffered at their hands, including a series of assassinations of key Bothan personnel on Coruscant. But your planners are impeded because it will be impossible to launch the fleets from the Bethawi system and other origin points without being detected and probably shadowed by Galactic Alliance forces. This eliminates your ability to perform surprise attacks."
The Bothan shrugged, looking at her as though he hadn't recognized a single term she'd used.
"So," she continued, "I am communicating to inform you that I can blind the GA observers and give you an opportunity of, 10 to 20 standard hours in which to deploy your forces without being detected. Of course, to do this, I would have to have information sources planted deep within the GA government. And I do. I shall prove this by providing you with some information. Free, useful information."
She modulated her voice, making it lower, more sultry.
"Favio, transmit the package."
The computer's voice responded. "At once, mistress."
"The files now coming up on your displays," Lumia continued, "are from the internal records of the Galactic Alliance Guard. They include details on the assassinations I mentioned a moment ago. By details, I mean details that the Holonews services never had. Exact times, places, and methods of assassination. Personal items the victims were carrying. What the victims were doing before they were killed, including recordings of their conversations and transmissions. Things that only the killers and their superiors could possess.
The fur rippled on Croyland's snout, just for a moment. It could have been nothing more than an itch. Lumia admired his self-control. As cold-blooded as the Bothans could be about such matters, Croyland could well have lost friends to this spree of assassination, and probably had.
"Irrespective of your earlier statements about imagined Bothan military activity," he said, "if these files turn out to be accurate, you will earn our thanks. They will be most useful when we prosecute the killer or killers."
"You are welcome."
Lumia gave him a nod, pure Hapen condescension.
"Now I will go about other duties. The last file transmitted has information on how and when to reach me, should you need to."
The Bothan opened his mouth to reply, but his hologram suddenly disappeared. Lumia's computer, primed to end the transmission when she made a specific statement, had done so. Lumia sagged in her chair. Her upright posture had put pressure on her abdomen, and it had been a drain through the second half of the conversation to keep the pain at bay. Now she could assume a more comfortable pose and concentrate on managing it. But she didn't have forever. The Bothans would check out her files, which would be verified. After all, she'd killed or arranged for the deaths of most of those Bothans. The details she had about those murders were accurate, and the Bothans would accept her further help. They had to. Now it was time to offer Jason a little aid.
"Transmit the CO package to Coruscant and to Jason," she said.
"At once, mistress." Elmas Private Spaceport, Coronet Corellia, Lounge of the Love Commander. The insertion onto Corellia had not been as difficult a task as Leia and the others had feared. They'd maintained a high orbit near a cluster of Alliance vessels, nervously waiting for their intelligence authorization to be revealed as a fake, until they had detected a small task force forming up. It consisted of a sensor-heavy shuttle, several starfighters, and a couple of bombers, obviously intended to make one or more reconnaissance passes over the planet's surface. Playing on their intelligence authorization, Han had calmed in, requesting permission to accompany the task force down into the atmosphere.
"Sure," had come the mission commander's reply. "But if you get blown up, you can't expect us to come back and pick up the pieces."
So they had flown down at the tail end of the task force, had waited until a squadron of Corellian TIE fighters had fallen on the force and had broken away, using terrain-following flying, as terrifying with Leia at the controls as it would have been with Han doing the honors, until they were well clear of the engagement zone and pursuit. Now, hours later, they waited in a hangar that cost a fortune to rent, but came with the scant protection offered by one smuggler when renting to another. Han's old contacts continued to pay off, so long as Lando was willing to pay out. They waited for nightfall and the covering darkness it would bring, as slight as that might be in the heart of the city, and reviewed recent news broadcasts. One that was often cycled showed Wedge Antilles at his retirement announcement.
"He'd never retire at a time like this," Leia said. "So he's being forced out."
Lando smoothed his false beard.
"But is he being forced out because he didn't approve of the attack on Tenel Ka, or because it was his plan and it failed?"
Han snorted.
"He put his career on the line to retake Trollis with a minimum of casualties. That whole mess at Hapes couldn't have been his plan.
It didn't work the way he thinks.
But he'll know who was responsible, Lando said. I think we should ask him.
Han and Leia exchanged a glance.
It may not be as easy as that, Leia said. We've already tried to reach him by comlink. All we got was a recorded message saying that he and his family were celebrating his retirement by going on vacation. Not where, not for how long, no information on how to reach him.
Who would know?
Their best friends are on the other side, Leia said. Tycho and Winter Selchu.
Han frowned. He's leaving Corellia.
Leia and Lando both looked at him. Lando looked confused, as if Han had been using stepping stones to cross a stream, and Lando couldn't spot the stones to follow him.
How do you figure that? Lando asked. His home is here.
Han irritably waved that notion away.
His home is the military. For him, Corellia's just a good place to retire. He didn't even grow up on planet. He grew up on a refueling station that doesn't exist anymore. No, he's got to get off-world. He's in disgrace with his former bosses, bosses who assassinate, and he's not going to leave his family vulnerable to them.
He considered for a moment.
He'll be in hiding now. What we'd have to do is figure out how he's going to get off-world, assuming he hasn't already, and meet up with him. And that would be a lot of work.
Leia nodded.
We may want to forget about him and go straight for Durgedjan or Denjax Tepler instead.
As it had on previous cycles, the Coronet newsfeed reached the Jedi Assassin's story. In related events, mystery surrounds the savage street attack by Galactic Alliance Jedi on unnamed Coronet citizens shortly after Admiral Antilles' retirement announcement. The holocam view switched to show a tall, strongly built young man, dressed in sweat-stained agricultural coveralls, a big, panicky grin partially concealing his Bantha in searchlights look.
First Rod or just shot First Jedi, he said,
his voice marked by the distinctive twang of agrarian townships surrounding Coronet.
Second Rodder kicked Second Jedi, put him right out. Whole thing took 2 seconds.
The grin suddenly went from nervous to genuinely pleased.
Jedi aren't so tough. Later, bunch of us are gonna go on a Jedi hunt.
Leia grimaced.
Fake Jedi? Or is the whole story fake?
Not our problem, Han said. Durgedjan is a reptile, and I don't intend to walk into his nest. Denjax Tepler may have no power, but he's been friendly before and may know something. Let's see if we can get to him.
Coronet Corellia. In the quietest hours of the morning, the three of them huddled around a small table in the most private sort of cantina. The privacy didn't come from remoteness. Situated on a major thoroughfare near the city's main spaceport, it was well-trafficked during daylight and evening hours. Because it catered so much to off-worlders and business traffic, its clientele was not chiefly made up of local regulars. Strangers elicited no curiosity. Bartenders with access to a modified spray-pattern blaster discouraged trouble and the official attention trouble might bring, while a commercially-minded bar owner who paid all the correct under-the-table bills discouraged other official or criminal inspection. The table Han, Leia, and Lando sat at was toward the back of the main room, where the 1,000 colorful rays of light from above the bar decorations and along the wall glow rods fell only dimly. They had a good angle on the door, and looked up every time someone entered the cantina. And this time, they didn't instantly dismiss the new customer as a prospect. The glow rods above the door showed him to be wrapped in a cloak, its hood casting his face into deep shadow. He stood there as the door swung shut behind him and scanned the bar's interior. Not sure whether this was Tepler's intermediary, Han straightened, made a look-at-me motion, and caught the new customer's attention. The man walked over and, without invitation, sat on the table's fourth chair. He didn't lower his hood, but at this distance Han recognized Denjak Stepler. His were handsome, if bland, features, the sort that belonged to a drinking buddy employed as a statistician or sales manager. Han cocked an eyebrow at him. "Isn't it risky for you to travel alone? I thought for sure you'd send a Rodian with a scar and a limp to escort us to a secret hideaway." Tepler snorted.
"All my hideaways are being monitored, as I am. But a while back I hired a lookalike, and my surveillance follows him home, meaning I can sometimes walk around freely."
"With no bodyguards," Leia said. Tepler nodded.
"Yeah."
He looked up as a waiter droid, a cylinder on wheels with eight arms, rolled up.
"Whiskey and water,"
he said, making his voice hoarse.
"Pre-war."
The droid rolled away, and Tepler returned his attention to the others, particularly Lando.
"I don't know you."
Lando extended his hand.
"Lando Calrissian."
Tepler shook it.
"Nice to meet you, though I think you picked a bad time to come out of retirement."
"Just as you picked a bad time to go into politics."
"True."
Tepler turned back to Han and Leia.
"So why am I here?"
"The attack on Queen Mother Tenel Ka," Leia said.
"Ah."
"First," Han said, "did you have anything to do with it?"
Tepler shook his head.
"Or know anything about it?"
"Not until it was underway."
"Han and I were at the site of the assassination attempt," Leia said. "Because of that, and for some other reasons, the GA suspects us of being involved. And because we transmitted a warning to Tenel Ka, the Corellians blame us for spoiling the plan. So we're interested in clearing our names."
"And in beating the responsible parties until they're skin sacks full of stew," Han added.
Leia glanced at her husband. That wasn't entirely helpful look. She returned her attention to Tepler. "Now, I know that doing what we ask puts you in a quandary. If you accept, technically you're betraying the secrecy acts of your government, a treasonable offense. But I also know you're opposed to a lot of what goes on. Thrakken Sal Solo is dead, but his spirit lives on in portions of the new government. And whoever ordered the attack on Tenel Ka has become our enemy. Our enemies don't tend to fare very well, and we will do whatever we can to bring him or her down. So I put it to you that if you don't tell us who ordered that mission, it's only because it was someone you want to remain in power." Tepler was silent a long moment, not looking at any of them. The waiter rolled up during his pause and set down his drink. Tepler handed the droid a pair of cred coins, then sipped at the whiskey until the droid was out of earshot. Finally, he said,
"There's no such thing as treason anymore. You know that?"
Han and Leia exchanged a confused glance.
"How do you figure that, kid?"
Han asked.
"Everything you do helps someone. Everything you do hurts someone. Everything you do violates a law while supporting an ethic, or vice versa. The only differentiation is whether you do things out of selfishness or altruism. And altruism just means I'm doing this to create a better world as I define better. And if there's no such thing as treason anymore, there's also no such thing as loyalty. You know what I mean?"
He raised his glass again, and when he put it down, it was empty. Looking at him, Han felt a little pang of sympathy. Tepler's eyes seemed devoid of life.
I think, Han said, when we leave Corellia, you ought to come with us.
Tepler laughed.
I can't leave.
We can get you off-world no problem, Han said. We have a good transport.
I know. It's at the Elmas port, correct?
Han's hand fell automatically onto the butt of his holstered blaster. He took a quick look around, but no one other than the waiter droid seemed to be paying them any attention. He kept his voice low, under control.
How did you know?
Where else would you be? You're smugglers. Organized crime, of the syndicate kind, I mean, controls Port Poveria, and Galactic Alliance Intelligence has its tentacles all through that place. If you were more upright GA citizens, you'd have had contacts there to berth with. And it's there that Corsec is doing most of its looking for that mystery transport that made landfall earlier today. But smugglers of the old-fashioned freelance kind, they have most of their contacts over at Elmas, as they have for generations. If Corsec had any idea that it was Han Solo who made landfall, that's where they'd be right now, in force.
Oh.
Han sat back and forced himself to relax. A little.
But that supports my point. We can get you off-world.
I'm no good with a blaster,
Tepler said. Lando frowned.
You know, you're more than commonly confusing to talk to, even for a politician.
I'm not a hand-to-hand combatant, Tepler went on. And I'm an indifferent pilot. I don't have an affinity for technical gear. But listening to people, sorting out truth from lies, guessing at motivations, manipulating people, encouraging them, maneuvering them, that's where I'm strong. You know, politics.
I still don't get it, Han said.
Leia spoke up. He's saying that politics is his battlefield, and you're encouraging him to run away from the battle.
Oh. Han thought about it. Yeah, I am.
Tepler turned a sad but scornful expression onto him.
Do you also encourage all your friends to run away from their fights?
Han shook his head.
Not for a long time. Not since I got to know them and realized that they had a chance to win. You, kid, don't have that chance. If you stay here, you're going to die.
Yeah, probably.
Tepler stared into the depths of his whiskey tumbler.
My ex-wife went on her last diplomatic mission knowing she might die. And she did. Am I so much less than she is?
The others looked among themselves, for once at a loss for words. But Tepler was the first to speak.
Der Gedgen,
he said.
Complete sentences, please, Lando said.
Der Gedgen was the chief planner for and signed off on the mission to kill the Queen Mother Tenel Ka.
Leia nodded. And it was an assassination mission, not a kidnapping attempt?
If they had grabbed her, they would have killed her.
Leia pressed on.
Wedge Antilles?
He didn't know about it. He was ordered to step down because he didn't support waging a war that dirty.
Tepler held up his glass, a signal to the waiter droid to refill it. Leia felt a little trickle of alarm, but it seemed remote, not directed at her. Closing her eyes, she extended her awareness through the Force to areas beyond her immediate surroundings, through the ceiling and floors, walls on all sides. Outside the front door and wall, she found outrage. Someone wanting to come in, but being prevented. More than one someone. A gradual massing of bodies. She opened her eyes. The waiter droid was just rolling up. She asked the droid,
"What's immediately beneath us?"
"That would be the storage and distillery rooms, my lady,"
the waiter said, its voice cultured like C-3PO's, but not as sing-song.
"We no longer do tours of our micro-distillery, but the floor is available for rent for private parties, holodrama recordings."
"Quiet,"
Leia said.
"Han, Lando, door."
The front door slammed open, and two Corsac agents in battle armor, carrying blaster rifles, were the first ones through it. Han's blaster cleared its holster, and Lando tipped the table over toward the intruders, providing cover. Han shot the first intruder in his chest armor. The blast didn't penetrate, but the impact knocked the man backward into a new wave of Corsac enforcers trying to get through the door. Tepler dived behind the table, switching his tumbler to his left hand, drawing his own hold-out blaster with his right. He fired over the table edge. His shot hit the glowing street sign over the door, incinerating it, raining sparks down on the intruders jammed there. Leia ignited her lightsaber. She spun to crouch behind the table, then plunged the glowing blade into the floor. She began to drag it around in a wide circle. The second intruder fired at the only upright figure in the vicinity. His blaster rifle shot hit the waiter droid at about knee level and neatly severed the cylinder there. With a somewhat inconvenienced-sounding cry of,
"I say,"
the droid toppled sideways. The tray of drinks and empty glasses it had been carrying crashed to the floor. A wave of shattered glass, half-melted ice, and unbreakable transparisteel containers washed across table, chair, and patron legs. Lando extracted his blaster from beneath the folds of his hip cloak. He brought it up parallel with Han's and fired, catching the faceplate of the intruder who had shot the droid. That man, too, staggered back and down, adding to the congestion at the doorway. Leia finished her sweep with the lightsaber, and a rough circle of flooring a meter and a half in diameter dropped away into darkness, rattling against a hard surface a moment later.
"Let's go,"
she said, making it sound like a suggestion, and dropped through. Her lightsaber lit her new surroundings. She was in a darkened, narrow corridor. Lando looked at Han.
"You first."
He took another shot at the doorway, catching a Corsac trooper in the second rank right on the kneecap. Han gestured for Lando to go.
"Age before beauty."
"Idiots." Tepler dropped through, blaster in one hand and tumbler in the other, landing awkwardly behind Leia. Rear ranks of invaders shoved the plug of stunned or injured troopers out of the doorway. Four spilled into the bar, more jamming up at the door. Han fired again and caught one in his armored gut, sending him spinning to the floor. The others returned fire, and Han, braced behind the tabletop, stared in alarm as whole chunks of its artificial wood surface were torn away, not impeding the blaster bolts in the least. Beside him, Lando slid through the hole. He kept his cane from colliding with anything, but his hip cloak caught on the edge of the hole and was yanked free of his shoulders. He landed gracefully and glared up at his traitorous garment. Then he trotted after Leia. Han grabbed one table leg and fell through the hole, hauling the leg with him. All four table legs dropped into the hole, leaving the tabletop flush against the floor. The awkwardness of his descent caused him to hit the corridor floor hard and go to his knees, but he rose unhurt and sprinted after the others, guided by the glow-rod-like qualities of Leia's lightsaber. Han rounded a corner and caught up with the others. This chamber was as large as the taproom above, but stacked high with plasteel crates and false wood kegs. Leia stood at the top of a short permacrete ramp. A metal door barred her way. She slashed at the top hinge of three, cutting through it. Tepler stood behind her, calm, blaster and tumbler at the ready. Lando, like a catalog hollow of elegant indifference, leaned against the wall, twirling his cane. Han gestured toward Tepler's tumbler.
"Get rid of that."
"Can't," Tepler said. "It has my fingerprints on it." Han grabbed the tumbler from him, tossed it into a corner, and pumped 3 blaster shots into it. When the smoke cleared, it was a melted, charred mass of transparasteel. There were more blaster shots from back the way they'd come. Han heard pieces of wood raining down into the corridor. Leia finished the second hinge and got to work on the third. Tepler stepped forward and raised his arm to catch the top of the door when it toppled. The door fell. Tepler wrenched it out of the way, and it clattered to the permacrete floor. On the other side, the ramp continued up. Several meters beyond it, Han could see speeders roaring past what had to be the end of the alley behind the cantina. He, Leia, and Tepler ran toward the escape the street represented. Lando remained behind. To delay pursuit, Han assumed. Leia extinguished her lightsaber as they reached the alley mouth. A narrow sidewalk gave them an avenue for escape, and cross-traffic just a few centimeters away roared past, the speeder's running lights leaving colorful horizontal streaks in the air. Han looked at the situation. This was going to turn into either a running blaster battle or a blaster battle performed on stolen speeders. "Ready to go, sweetheart?"
"Garbage loader," Leia said.
"You always know the right thing to say." Han followed her gaze. Lumbering up the flyway toward them, low toward the ground, was a repulsor-lift-based garbage loader, a story and a half tall, wider than a standard traffic lane, with droid arms along its upper rim to seize garbage receptacles, lift them into the air, and dump their contents into the vessel's payload bay. Leia led them from the alley and along the sidewalk in the direction of traffic, but she walked backward, concentrating on the pilot of that garbage loader.
"Nice time for a nap," she whispered. "Good place for a nap."
Lando ran from the alley mouth, neither leg apparently causing him distress. He carried his cane tucked under his left arm, military academy style. "We have maybe 15 seconds, he said. Then he gave Leia a curious look and turned to stare at the object of her interest. The trash loader pulled over until it was mostly in the traffic lane, but also fully covering the sidewalk, and came down to a landing directly in front of the alley mouth. The pilot, illuminated by blue cockpit lighting, was a jowly middle-aged man. He leaned back in his seat and closed his eyes.
"Kill the engines," Leia said, and sagged just a bit.
The effort to impose her will on someone at range, without the benefit of the target being able to see her eyes or hear her voice, had taken a toll on her. Han and Lando obliged by aiming their blasters at the front face of the garbage loader's underside and firing 4 or 5 times each into it. The blaster fire immediately awoke the pilot, and Han saw the man seize the controls and try to lift off, but it was too late. The multi-ton vehicle was dead, firmly situated flush with the alley mouth. Now Han could hear curses and hammering from where the loader blocked the alley. The Corsac agents had reached the obstacle. "Time to grab a speeder and run for it," Lando said. Tepler shook his head. "I'll be less conspicuous on foot and on my own. Good luck." He turned and dashed away along the sidewalk.